My
Well,
pleasure.
welcome everyone. Our guest board member, Travis, thank you again for joining us. Sounds like you may have been on a previous call as well. So thank you for making it for the long haul. So with that, obviously we're on Zoom. So Jeremiah, I imagine you're recording attendance and guests.
Yes.
I'd like to call the meeting to order. And if I can get a motion to approve the agenda.
Janina, I motion to approve the agenda.
Thank you, Janina, and welcome. Do I have a second? Thank
you. Madhu, I second.
Thank you, Madhu. All right, Zena.
Aye.
Ken.
Aye.
Travis.
Aye.
Madhu.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Denise.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
And Anthony, aye. The agenda is approved. So very quickly, are there any presentations from the floor on non-agenda items? Okay, are there any presentations from the floor on agenda items? Okay, with that, I will pass it over to Farnaz.
Hi, everyone. It's wonderful to see you all. So today, I'm going to forego a longer presentation since we're spending a lot of time on our strategic priorities benchmark chart and the LCAP, and a lot of our updates are intertwined into both of those documents. I did just want to begin this meeting with a huge appreciation and a celebration. As you all know, we have been trying to get all of our existing loans for ECMS Inglewood and ECMS Gardena refinanced and combined with a loan for ECHS Gardena and the purchase of the property across the street from ECMS Gardena. And today, so we did a presentation last week for the S&P, so we were rated by the S&P. And then this week we did a presentation for the Charter School Finance Authority. And this is kind of a big deal, you know, like Fiona Ma, there's elected officials on it and we presented, it was just Tracy and I, and they all unanimously voted to approve our loan. So it's very exciting, it's a step closer. And what's exciting about all of this is just that these loans will significantly reduce the burden on our schools for a very long time. The actual benefit to us in terms of just the financing costs relative to another type of loan is anywhere from $10 to $15 million over the life of the loan in comparison with any other loan that we would be able to access. So this is a huge opportunity for us. And I just really want to celebrate and appreciate both Tracy and Allison's leadership on this. They have worked really tirelessly and had hundreds of meetings associated with this. I sort of pop in for presentations and I don't want to take all the credit, but I was just extremely proud of how we represented and what we, the information we had to share. So thank you so much for all your hard work, Tracy and Allison, on this. Any questions or thoughts on that? Okay, so with that, I want to hand off to Casey for her update.
Thanks. Thanks, Farnaz. Hi, everyone. You might have seen the email that Jeremiah sent earlier today, but in case you didn't have a chance to, this is going to be my final year as principal at ECHS Lawndale. And I'm just really grateful for all of the support that I've always gotten from all of you and just from our school community. It's been such an honor and a privilege to be a part of this school. I started here as a Spanish teacher coming out of being pink slipped from LAUSD, and it was like such a breath of fresh air. And I remember stepping onto our campus and thinking, oh, this is what education is supposed to look like. And I've never stopped thinking that. And this is such a beautiful place. And I feel so, so honored that it's nurtured me and watched me grow. And I've been able to have a little piece of each of our students' lives and each of yours. And so thank you for all of the support. I'm like so, so grateful, and I don't take for granted how amazing all of you have been and all the work that you do and time that you dedicate to read our WASP reports and approve all of our budgets and LCAPs every year. But it makes such a world of a difference for so many people here on the ground every day, even if you don't get to see all of it. So I just have so much gratitude and love for this place, and I always will. And I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you so much, Casey. I do want to open up for love and appreciation for Casey now, because I assume she will not be staying for the whole of this meeting. And I don't think that we as board member, that the board has that many opportunities to directly appreciate the leadership of principals and staff. So I wanted to do that, but I wanted to start myself and just say 11 years of dedication and service to this organization. I think you've given your life to this place without question. And it's without a doubt the hardest role at ECS as well. I all of us have tough roles, and it's challenging in different ways, but leading that high school, leading a high school, is a different thing in and of itself. So I want to appreciate your service, but I also want to celebrate the fact that you're choosing to take this moment to be present with your family and be present with your little human. I shared with Casey that I've made this decision several times in my career and my life as well, and I've never regretted it. And I've every time anyone says to me, this is what I'm doing, I don't question it. I say 100%, you gotta do what you gotta do. And so that was my reaction to her. And I love you, and I appreciate all your hard work on behalf of our families and kids. And I want to just open up for everyone else to celebrate you as well.
Well, I have known Casey since before she was principal, and when she was a Spanish teacher, and I watched her. I watched you take over that position. I watched you grow into it and make it yours and transform the campus and the curricula and the community. And it's just been a wonderful journey to watch, to see you do that, to have you come into such power and to be such a wonderful leader for the organization. And we're going to miss you, but I'm sure we will not, this will not be the last that we will see you. So, best of luck.
Well, Casey, I just want to say it's been great to work with you on campus and getting to know you and how you run your ship there. It's so loving and caring, and I just so admire you for creating this environment where students can feel loved and excited about going to school. I appreciate so much your tireless commitment and dedication to all of the students. And I think you're a great leader, and I wish you luck, and thank you so much.
Casey, you were one of the first principals that I met. And I want to share that I have loved seeing how you lead from a place of authenticity. I think that says a lot about you as a person, your dedication as well. And I thank you so much for all your efforts. I will miss you and wish you the best.
Yeah, Casey. I really first want to say Freddie is a lucky one, surely you as Freddie's on-earth angel is there to protect and to watch that person grow, and I'm sure Freddie will turn out to be a phenomenal human being like yourself, so that's very cool that you get to do that. I guess our loss is Freddie's gain, and I really appreciate your thoughtfulness, just going back in the time that we've worked together in the past, 5 or 6 years, and doing the RFIs and having some, more private sessions has been fantastic. And just to see you grow in the leadership, thank you so much for your for your participation. And I don't think, as you stated in the beginning of the call, that it's you're not going away, that you'll still be here and somehow, some way involved. And we look forward to however you are involved. So thank you.
Can I jump in? It's Allison. Casey, I'm so excited for you. I know how hard this decision was for you. And I'm so excited that you're going to be able to spend time with Freddie. And you summed it up really well in your letter to the board about how important these years are. And you know how I feel about that as well. And I'm also very grateful to you for holding on to ECHS and our baby in Lawndale for as long as you did, and making it yours and making it more special than it was before you arrived. So thank you for your 11 years. And I don't doubt there will be times when our roads will cross again.
Thank you all so much. Oh, Kennedy,
sorry. I just wanted to say, first of all, I want to tell her that you're never going to get rid of Allison. Once she gets you, you're it. You're hers for life. But just want to say thank you for what you've done for Lawndale. It's a big testament, the fact that you were there for 11 years. And I know when I came back 10 years later and I still saw some of the faces there, that's a testament that they loved your leadership and that you grew them. That you grew not just yourself, but so many people there, so many teachers as leaders. So, you know, in 11 years, you've made such a difference that it's going to last a lifetime. So thank you.
Thank you all. Casey, we're going to have more opportunities to celebrate your leadership, but I definitely wanted to give this time to the board. And thank you guys. So with that, I'm going to hand off to Dr. Guardado for an update about ECHS Gardena.
Thank you, Farnaz. And Casey, you know how I feel. Hi, everyone. It's really lovely to see all of your faces. Happy Thursday and happy Junior Friday as well. I'm going to go ahead and just provide an update. And I'm really looking forward to all of you visiting our site at some point in time, hopefully before the end of the semester. So we are officially the home of the Vipers. We had a really good student activity where we selected our mascot and they decided to go for the Viper snake. Which does not by any means reflect who we are as a community. We are loving, kind, generous, giving, but we want to portray ourselves as dangerous and fierce and a group of individuals that you need to watch out for. With that said, I'm going to just share with you a couple of celebrations, updates, and just some next steps, because we're definitely doing a lot of work. With that said, a couple of things that we have to celebrate. We have a lot of proud moments so far. We've celebrated over 30 students that qualified to being either honor rolls or high honor rolls this semester. Those are some of the images that you see. They were incredibly excited. We not only sent out an invitation to their homes, we had donuts and hot chocolate for them and then had a gathering outside in the eating area where we celebrated them and really just encouraged them to continue going down the path. And the intention for this is so that we could inspire the rest of the students that did not qualify this semester. We are also doing extremely well with our weekly communication sent out to family on Fridays. We have an incredibly active group of parents. They're really comfortable just reaching out to us via talking points, via email. And I would love to share some of the comments at some point in time with the board members so that like you can see for yourself the kind of community with our parents that we are creating. We also acquired 3 social work and counseling interns that has supported our one-to-one like communication with our students, our ability to check in with them, not only with socio-emotional needs, but also with their academic needs. Jen will be really proud of this, but she knows we also have had no positive COVID cases since we returned from winter break. That is a huge win for us. It continues to speak really positive about our systems in place and just our students' ability to follow the norms. We also created our first Black Student Union Club, which is being led by Ms. Harris in our effort to continue to just give every child the space to feel like they're a blessing at our site. We transitioned in advisory planning from one leader to everybody planning for advisory, and that has been a really interesting shift because the ownership that all of the teachers are showing in our space, it's incredible. Advisory has transformed in all of the spaces because now everybody has a voice, and therefore advisory is feeling a lot more like a collaborative space. We also created a designated ELD block for our ELs, which is something that we did not have last semester. And excitingly enough, we also held our first African-American family partnership that Ms. Harris led. And we also have over 150 applications for ninth grade for next year. So enrollment-wise, I think we're solid right now. In terms of academics, at the end of last semester, we did a deep study to understand the correlation between the semester's grade distribution for both math and ELA, our NWEA data and IAB data. And after considering possible challenges, distance learning, socio-emotional stamina, our current school setup, we believe that the highest leverage to increase student academic performance would be through the implementation of a school-wide intervention program. With that said, we adopted Achieve 3000 Math that is now catering to the vast majority of our students. If you really think about the MTSS tiers, the first tier, it's supposed to address 80% of our student body. And that is what Achieve 3000 is doing. The students, those students are now receiving intervention twice a week for 75 minutes, where those 75 minutes are broken into goal setting so that it's relevant and meaningful to them. Then they do 35 minutes of Achieve 3000 nonstop. Then they engage in a reflection, and then they have math work time. For students who did not need math intervention, we actually created a math club that is being led by our math teacher, where they're not only doing like brain problems, but at the end of every 4 weeks, they get to go out and do problem solving in the community. We're going to start off really easily with just taking them to an escape room so that they can see a correlation with something that's fun outside of the school. And then we're going to start investing into like bigger things in the community so that they can see the relationship between math and their daily lives. For students who needed just a little bit more, so that tier two group, we're actually utilizing varsity tutors. It's one-on-one tutoring. And we were very intentional in making sure that our students with exceptionalities did not all end up in that category, because we really want to make sure that we're celebrating their successes in math while also honoring the needs and services that they need so that they can be successful. In addition to that, we also did a deep study of our school culture, and we realized that there was a discrepancy between the data that we were collecting and how our teachers were feeling. And we realized that our teachers were feeling really concerned about our norms and our priorities and just like not really understanding the relationship between the work that they were doing. So we started to name it, came together after many, many meetings, realized that we just needed to have a shared language and a shared understanding and give them the space so that they could also feel as though their input was appreciated. And so we created this steps as a result of that. So really excited about the progress that we made in this aspect of our school culture, because as a founding school, it matters that all stakeholders feel like they have a say in what we're doing. And then lastly, next steps with our school-wide intervention, like everything else in life, we can't just like throw something and assume that it'll work out. So we will continue to refine our intervention program by conducting weekly randomized like journal checks and class checks. We're going to be collecting feedback bi-weekly from intervention teachers, assessing, we're going to be reassessing students to then determine if they're going to culminate out of the intervention program to move in, to move into another elective, if they need more support and or if we need to involve the parents. We're also going to continue to develop our school culture by continuing our work with Dr. Kenjes and Dr. Tiffany Marie in confronting anti-Blackness and racism. We're going to host focus groups with teachers and students. We're going to continue to look at our data. And of course, we're going to celebrate our wins. And we are really excited about preparing for our first Catalina Island trip. The kids are really excited. It is helping our vaccination rates as well. We're also working on our like baby version of our intercession or interdisciplinary collaboration. And of course, we're going to continue to engage our future families via recruitment events.
Thank you, Dr. Guardado. I just wanted to open up if anyone has any questions or ideas or thoughts for Dr. Guardado. While we do that, I wanted to share this with you. I don't know if you had thought about the fact that vipers were such beautifully green animals, but this is a spiny bush viper that looks very, very aligned with our.
Yes.
That's gorgeous. I just had to share that.
That is a beautiful snake. I've never, oh my God, that's, you got to share that with the students.
That's gorgeous. I'm just going to add it in every email, Molly.
It's amazing.
Any questions or thoughts for Dr. Guardado?
I'll just throw out there, Doctor. I know you're doing a escape room, but if and when you want to be more applicable in the real world, and I'm in affordable housing and do a lot of finance, so happy to bring the kids in and show them spreadsheets and show them how math can be applicable to affordable housing.
Yes, I will definitely take you up on that.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Cindy, for that excellent presentation. And with that, we're going to hand off to Dorothy for the financials presentation. Dorothy, do you want to share or do you need me to?
Yeah, I'll share.
Thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to skip some of the slides because we went into a lot of detail in finance committee, but if you have questions on one I skip, please just interrupt me. So the governor's January proposal was good news. There's going to be, or he's expecting a COLA of, 5.33 for next year. And actually the LAO, the Legislative Analyst Office, thinks when the next time we see it in the May revise, it'll actually be slightly higher than that. Maybe 6%. So we'll see. There's also supposed to be extra money for special ed. And then the two middle schools will get even more money for the expanded learning opportunity program. It is that these, I have more slides on this later, but it's like an extended day, 9 hours, and it's like 30 extra days of just bonus time for the kids. Here's just a quick look at some historical COLA and where it's projected to be for now. There are some slides on how the funding formula, there are a lot of proposals out there, and here's just a list of some of them. And they have, different ways of how they're going to increase funding. And one of the ones that is super important for charters is that this SB 579, which environmental has been involved with in terms of testifying and getting in touch with the local legislators, is that it would let the schools use prior year ADA for this year, which they are not allowed to do, but the districts are, and that would actually help the schools a lot, which we'll see in a, later in the deck. This is just more info on that expanded learning program for the sixth graders. In terms of how much money this is, so for Inglewood, this year they're getting $124,000 and it would grow to $263,000. And this $263,000 number is an estimate. It's actually based on the ADA of the sixth graders. So it will fluctuate, but there's also supposed to be some extra money for arts and music, and that's the orange bar. Here's a look at Gardena's pot. It's just a teeny bit lower because it's also, it's based on the sixth grade ADA as well as the school's unduplicated pupil population.
Dorothy, I'm sorry to interrupt. Can you share a little bit about the intention of this funding and that it's linked to LCAP funding if not implemented? What you shared last
time. Yeah, so when the governor, when he put it into this year's budget, everyone was supposed to start following and meet certain guidelines in terms of who you offer it to and how many days you're supposed to offer it. That has been extended to not actually be audited until the year 23-24. So we get an extra year of implementation. So next year you get this money and you're allowed to roll it over, but it seems like it's a lot of money to spend. So next year we can think of it more as like a practice year. And then we kind of have to hit those targets in 23-24, because it's proposed that if you're short on the days, they're going to dock your local control funding proportionally.
Thank you.
Yeah, and this is all, you know, just proposal. So we'll see if they change the language the next time we see the May revise. These are all the plans you've already done this year in gray, and then some things that still need to be done. I know I have this A through G for April 1st. That is just the date that the CDE and the legislators had, but there's flexibility with it now because they actually haven't, they released the entitlements and then they took them back. So you don't even know when you plan it, how much you actually have. And then the money we were just talking about, the expanded learning plan, there is a plan that has to be presented, but there's no specific due date for it, but you need to have it before you start your program.
Can I ask you about the ELUP?
Yeah.
So those extra 30 days, that's in addition to the 175 base, right?
Yeah, so that is a little unclear. So if you offer more than 175, can you count those days you're already? It doesn't sound like it right now.
Okay. And then 9 hours of, so it has to be extended plus the school day. So if it's in the summer, then there has to be a minimum amount of academic instruction.
No, I think it can be nine. I mean, it's all supposed to be like educational. It doesn't have to be, you know, exactly related to your curriculum, but okay. They just want it to be, I guess, educational and fun.
And okay. And the last question around that is, do we have an idea of whether, how we're going to do that yet? Is that going to be like part of the summer program or during the summer or during the winter breaks, Thanksgiving break?
We're in early stages of planning for this right now. So right now for this summer, we have a plan to partner with a sleepaway camp that's going to be offering 10 days to all students. We're going to be offering our regular end of school year programming and our summer bridge programming, not likely to get above 20 days this summer. And then we're going to build towards the 30-day mark in future years. One of the things that we're concerned about is the amount of weight on the leaders and the school site staff.
Right.
And so we're really thinking about how do we seek external partnerships that can deliver this programming and service to our community without further burdening our existing teams. So our partnership with Camp Max Strauss, it's the Bob Waldorf camp. It's a Big Brothers Big Sisters program camp that is really a phenomenal partner that we sent 10 kids to last year, is offering 10 days of sleepaway camp to our students for $200 a piece for 10 days.
Nice.
It's phenomenal. Could be very life-changing and wonderful for the kids. So we're trying to think of creative solutions like that that are also inspiring.
That's awesome. That was my concern, that it wouldn't be done on the backs of the current staff and admin, because 30 extra days, that would be way too much to ask.
As much as humanly possible. But really the intention of these funds are to extend childcare. It's sort of like the the TK and the ELOP requirements, the transitional kindergarten and the ELOP requirements. So it's like, what do working families do to support their children's needs during summers? And that's why it only goes till sixth grade. So older kids don't need that as much. So we'll have to see what we can do.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So we'll move into the school's financials. I do have slides on each school's ADA. There's the actual months, and then we have the budget and forecast. And then I did mark, because you'll see it drops in months 5 and 6, and that is because of Omicron. So for Lawndale, they are currently averaging 490. But we are assuming about 500. So we have decided, Tracy and I have decided, we're just not going to adjust ADA anymore until, because we feel like we're hopeful that the schools will be held harmless. And then ECHS is actually really close to the hold harmless ADA, but you'll see at the middle schools how much it'll increase.
So one question there is that hold harmless only applies, it means you get the prior year ADA or your current year, you have a choice. So for growing schools, that really doesn't work that well, because this, you don't want last year's ADA if you're growing, right?
Right. I don't know how they're going to handle that.
Okay. Yeah. And who does that impact other than obviously the second high school?
I think the other high school, they would just use, they would use the current year ADA, but they're actually tracking better than forecast.
But all the other schools are full grown at full term, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't impact them. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the high school, we added a bunch of expenses. The utilities are a little bit higher. We added some additional hours for classified employees. There's some COVID related for PPE and the testing. There was a change in the unduplicated paperwork collections. So that did affect the local control funding a little bit. And then we had to increase the expense for computers. Next is Gardena. So we had previously adjusted, I don't remember, like 2 months ago, their ADA at the middle schools. So you can see, right now their forecast is at 326. And if you look at all these, the six actual months, they're actually averaging 320. But if the hold harmless goes through, they'll actually have another 150,000. So the other changes the changes from the last time you saw the forecast, we had to add the COVID grant as well as some supplies for that. And then they had some increased computer expense. For Inglewood, we are looking at forecasts of 333, but they are averaging 324, mainly because of the Omicron hit them pretty hard. But if the hold harmless goes through, they would get another 182,000 in revenue. In terms of their forecast changes, there were some adjustments to salaries for the open positions that are still open. Their COVID grant was added. This local revenue was for a workers' compensation refund, and then associated benefits for the decreased salaries, and then additional expenses for like a portable stage and a picnic table and for their computers too. And then the new high school, we're assuming the forecast at 105, but they're actually averaging at 108. So that is great. And they only had some slight changes to their expenses, just some extra hours for classified staff and a rent adjustment. And then a look at their cash. And there, are there any questions? Okay, next is, should I keep sharing, Tracy, or
Sure, if you don't mind.
Okay.
So now we're transitioning into the update about the Equitable Facilities Fund financing, for which we're seeking approval in the action items through a resolution that summarizes all of the things that we're putting in place for this funding. So the Equitable Facilities Fund, or EFF for short, is a nonprofit lender that is putting together this loan for us that is backed by by taxable bond dollars. It is a total of a $31 million loan, and it is further secured for them through this CSFA intercept, which is what Farnaz mentioned we were just approved for earlier today. And so that means there's essentially a lockbox on the funds for our three schools included in this loan, so that their debt service is first paid off before their funds even come to us from the state. So there will be a monthly amount that they will intercept before they send our general funding to us to pay off the debt service. On the next slide. There's a detail of the sources and uses for this loan. So $21.6 million of it is for the purchase and the renovation of ECHS Gardena's site, which they are currently already leasing a portion of. They're in just one building right now, and with this, we'll be purchasing about four buildings and also renovating the large educational building in order to make enough classrooms to house up to 500 students. We will also be refinancing the existing loan for ECMS Gardena that is with Beneficial State Bank, which is at about $4.5 million in principal. And we'll be refinancing the ECMSI loan with California Credit Union, which is at about $3 million in principal. That was used to build 10 classrooms on the Inglewood site. And then we also have put in an offer to purchase two lots across the street from ECMS Gardena in order to create more green space for that school. And so there's $1.5 million in this loan for that purchase. And there's a cost of issuance of about $330,000. So altogether, that adds up to the roughly $31 million. And at this time, Menlo Charter Properties would be putting in about $34,000 of equity if the cost of issuance is at that $330,000.
Tracy, can I just interrupt for 1 second and say that I want Travis to be aware, and also ECHS Lawndale to be aware, that ECHS Lawndale is not included in this. So this is financing for our three other schools. And so the funding for ECHS Lawndale is not going into the lockbox model that was described earlier. Thank you for clarifying
that. Yeah, so in this deal, we have what's called an obligated group, which is our two middle schools and our new high school. So the borrower is Menlo Charter Properties. Environmental Charter Schools is not the borrower, but we do want to make everyone aware of that intercept for our three schools and the way that borrowing is sort of, further secured is that we are going to be approving leases for those three schools which really we already have leases in place for Gardena and Inglewood. We'll be amending those to reflect the new 35-year term. But for ECHS Gardena, obviously they currently don't have a lease, so that'll be a new lease for them. And so those leases encumber the funds for the debt service for those three schools. So the financing for Gardena and for Inglewood taking over their loans is the reason we put this into the pool, was primarily because they will have much better terms. It's a much longer amortization and term. So both of their loans had 7-year terms. Inglewood's was up in a couple years. Gardena's was newer, but now we will have secured those loans across 35 years. And the effective yield of this loan is about 3%. We are expecting to lock it tomorrow. It keeps rising little bits here and there. So tomorrow we'll know the final rate, but it's, you know, significantly less than what they're paying at this time. So the covenants that are with this loan include a 1.1 debt service coverage ratio, which is equivalent to the covenants we had in place for the two middle schools already, but that's a pretty typical coverage ratio requirement. There's also a days cash on hand requirement, 60 days cash on hand. And at this time, our projections out through fiscal year 26 well exceed these numbers. There's a fixed charge coverage ratio of 1.1 at the obligated group sites, and an additional indebtedness debt service coverage ratio of 1.2. So that's a little bit higher. If we ever want to go out for an additional loan, we have to meet a higher coverage ratio in order for them to approve that. There's also an academic covenant, which requires certain levels of proficiency on math and ELA on the CASP. So you can see those there. And then there is also an enrollment covenant. So there's an enrollment minimum that we have to meet in each year across those obligated group schools, which we expect to exceed. And again, the existing schools are pretty steady in their enrollment. And right now ECHS Gardena is looking really great in its enrollment as well. So we feel confident we can meet those.
Could you go one back one slide so I can see the academic? Thanks.
And so I can read those too, if that's helpful. We either have to exceed the district local district in which we are located, we have to exceed their percent proficient in math and ELA, or we have to exceed their economically disadvantaged students' proficient scores, or their African-American students' proficient scores. So at this time, I think we meet definitely the second for all three schools. Although I guess ECHSG doesn't have any testing yet, but the other two schools.
Thank you.
So Tracy, I mean, this is self-explanatory, but just I think to expand, when you say debt service coverage ratio of 1.1, you're basically saying that the net operating income is 1.1 higher than the service debt for the year.
Yeah, but you do add back in the lease costs and I think amortization.
Yeah, yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cuz so that for us, I mean, that's really, for me it seems like it shows a lot of strength for your net operating income to be able to cover the full years of debt service, right? Because it's already, your net operating income assumes that piece, that the debt service already included in the cost, right? In calculating the net operating income, or no?
I believe they add that back in.
They add it back in, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But what is that typical to other schools? Because ECS is a very strong financial entity, so.
Yeah, you know, I'm not certain, but that's not an unusual covenant for a loan. So I think any school that has a loan
we'll be able to meet that.
A certain size needs to meet that. Yeah.
Okay.
But I do think, you know, we actually well exceed that. And in past years too, and in our projections. So I do think that really speaks to our network strength, and especially, you know, the brand new school. It's amazing that they have the financials that they do. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
I can also say one of the things that was mentioned to me by someone recently who I was speaking with from another charter schools group that applied for this funding and didn't get it, was he said it really speaks to our academic results, because they did not get it because they were not performing at the academic levels needed to pass the application process. So I think it really speaks to the job that Danielle and all of the principals are doing that we can even get this funding. Any questions for Tracy?
Yes, this is Geneva. Sorry if you hear my little ones in the background, we're cooking dinner, but I just wanted to ask, is it really common to have an educational component attached to a loan?
I wouldn't say so. None of our traditional bank loans have it. We did have it on our, so if you do a CDFI loan, which our Gardena's original financing was a new market tax credits deal that was managed by Capital Impact, which is a CDFI, a community development financing initiative, I think that stands for, but they're sort of a mission-based lender. They also had academic covenants for us. So I think it depends on the type of lender.
Did the new market tax credit loan have it too, or did they not have it? I don't remember.
I do believe they had it, yeah.
So two of the loans.
I had to provide a very detailed, and I, not that I gave all that information, somebody else put that in, but every year we had to report out detailed information about our academic results.
Yeah, I remember that in the entire Gardena deal transaction.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Beth has a question in the chat.
Tracy, two questions. One thing that came to mind is that, like, all of the school's scores aggregated together, or is it like school by school? And then is it like over the course of the years, is it sort of moment by moment, like this year's, and then they're going to think about it some more, and next year's, then they're, or is it like over the course of time? Do you know anything about that? I mean, maybe this is too specific.
Well, so I think they're going to look at each school's performance each year on the CASP. And this covenant is, well, obviously we do have to meet it, but the if we don't meet it in a given year, it doesn't mean that we can't maintain the loan. So if we don't meet it, they will simply have us put together a plan to state how we're going to meet it the next year. And if we don't meet the next year, then we have to bring in a consultant to help us to meet it. So there are some structures in place so that, you know, if we have a bad year, it's not going to blow up the loan or anything.
And what's the first year that they're counting?
This year.
I do want to point out that we have met and surpassed this year after year, because it's not against LAUSD as a whole. It's against a student population within LAUSD as a whole. If it was against LAUSD as a whole with Gardena, that would be a risk area. But when you look at the student group, we do better. And then the other factor that's important is that several of our funder relationships have the same types of requirements in place as well. So like Charter School Growth Fund has a similar model that if we don't meet the academic covenants after year one or two, they implement some protections. And this EFF was actually launched by Charter School Growth Fund leaders. So they do use some of the same practices.
I have to say that I'm so impressed that the principals are keying in on this. And it's just a testament to the strong leadership teams that we have on all of our sites, that they like recognize the importance of this, they care about it, and they want to understand it. So I think that's huge and very inspiring.
So unless there's no other questions or comments, Robert, will you be sharing your screen for the presentation on LCAP?
I will.
Awesome. Thank you, Rob.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. So over the last few months, the home office team and the principals have been developing our LCAPs. They're still in development, but I'm going to give you an overview, or rather Tracy and I are going to give you an overview of how things are shaping up so far. In case there's anyone here who's not very familiar with the LCAP, I'm going to give you a quick bit of background. The Local Control Accountability Plan is a three-year plan where we explain how we're using the funding we receive to improve the services and outcomes for our students. In it, we present and analyze the annual measurable outcomes, or AMOs. We look at that data for the current school year, and then we reflect on what that data says about our current plan, and then we adjust our plan accordingly. Our current school year, 21-22, is the first year of our current three-year plan, which was presented to this board last year. So this year's LCAP will review the AMOs for this school year, 21-22, i.e. the first year of the plan, and will update the plan for 22-23, which is the second year of the plan. So we're still mid-year, so today we'll review what we know so far about our AMOs and expenditures, and at the next board meeting, we'll present the final results. All four of our sites have the same three goals on their LCAPs. You can see the full text here, but for short, let's call them outcomes, culture, and operations. These are written to align with the priorities of the California Department of Education and ECS's strategic plan. The four sites may have differing targets, actions, and expenditures, but all are working toward these three goals. So that's it for LCAP background. Let's begin the review. So we'll start with the AMOs for ECHS Lawndale. As I mentioned earlier, we're still mid-year, so we don't have a lot of the data for our AMOs. For example, end-of-year standardized test results, climate survey data. What you see here are the metrics for which we do have some data. The metric is listed in the first column, baseline measurement from before the start of the plan in the second, current year data in the third, and the fourth column is the final target, the one we're aiming to meet by the end of 23-24. Again, that last column is the final target for the plan, not necessarily a target for this year. So Lawndale is already well on its way towards meeting its English learner reclassification goal. Expect that percentage, 14.6, to rise as more English learners are reclassified this year. Overall attendance rates are about the same as last year, but chronic absenteeism has decreased. No dropouts so far, suspensions are very, very low, and no students have been expelled. Finally, we administered a preliminary climate survey in the fall, and we got some really promising results. A 10% increase in both the percentage of students who feel the school is safe and in the percentage of students who feel connected to the school. So very exciting indeed. Next up is ECMS Gardena. They're also well on their way toward meeting their English learner reclassification goal. Again, that percentage should continue to rise as more ELs are reclassified this year. Overall attendance rates are down from last year and chronic absenteeism has increased. This is due to the Omicron variant surge. No dropouts, no suspensions, and no expulsions so far. ECMSG also administered that preliminary climate survey and also got promising results, a 15% increase in the percentage of students who feel the school is safe, and a 19% increase in the percentage of students who feel connected to the school. Again, super promising. Next up is ECMS Inglewood. Inglewood has reclassified a few ELs as fluent this year, So they're short of their target now, but they have plenty of time before the end of the year to continue reclassifying. And sometimes they do more of their reclassifying toward the end of the year. So this may not be indicative. Like ECMSG, overall attendance rates are down and chronic absenteeism has increased. Again, it's due to the Omicron variant surge. No dropouts, no expulsions, and just a couple of suspensions this year. So all that's pretty great. Like the other sites, ECMSI administered that climate survey and got some promising results, a 16% increase in feelings of safety, and a 24% increase in the percentage who feel connected to the school, which is a pretty huge increase. Last but certainly not least is our new school, ECHS Gardena. Since this is their first year, there was no historical baseline data for these metrics, so we're creating those baselines this year. The targets here were based on historical data from the Lawndale High School and the Gardena Middle School. ECHSG has not yet begun to reclassify their EL students, so I haven't listed that metric here. Their attendance rate is about the same as Lawndale's. Chronic absenteeism is a little higher than we'd like, but again, that's due to the pandemic. No dropouts, no suspensions, no expulsions. And once again, promising climate survey results. 84% of students feel the school is safe and 76% feel connected. So that covers it for the AMOs. So I'll now hand it over to Tracy, who will talk to you about our site budgets.
Thanks, Robert. Okay, I'm going to start sharing screen. Let's see here. All right. So I'm going to be going over our expectations to date for our LCAP budget expenditures, the actuals versus what we budgeted, and just highlight some of the areas where we're looking to not either not spend as much or spend more. So on this slide for ECHS Lawndale, the big areas that are different from a budget are the MTSS, which specifically we did not hire an additional instructional coach for Lawndale that we had been budgeting. They decided to spend some funding in a slightly different way. And then they also, the ELD pocket, we added some consultants because of some of the additional state and federal funding that we learned about after the July budget was, or after we set our July budget. We didn't see the actual budget until later, and that is when we learned of additional funding that we wanted to spend in this way. So any questions on that? All right, I'll move on to the next slide. With regard to goal two, the big differential here is that ECHS Lawndale elected not to hire an African-American student coordinator as originally budgeted in the confronting anti-Blackness and racism bucket. On the next slide, there are quite a few buckets here that are different from budget. One of them is the bucket employees for the educational program. This was primarily some adjustments for leave coverage. There are quite a few people on leave going, or back from leave, but there were a couple of long-term subs that were hired to cover some of those positions. So you can see that employees for operations increased because those non-certificated folks are covering some of the certificated folks. We also hired health and safety coordinators at the schools. We decided to make that change after the original budget was approved back in June. So we hired health and safety coordinators at all four sites. So that's going to be a theme throughout all of these sites. We also spent a lot more on curriculum and supplies than originally expected, or expecting to spend more on curriculum and supplies than initially budgeted. That's primarily for computers, Chromebooks for the students. We found that a lot of them A, are quite old, and B, since they're going home with the students, are coming back damaged, which makes sense since they're 5 years old. So we've had to put a lot more funding into computers. We also secured E-rate funding for that specifically. So it's offset by funding, but we are spending quite a bit more on computers, on COVID testing, which there was also funding for, but we are spending quite a bit on COVID testing. And then we also increased funding for advisories. In professional services, we added some tutoring, which Cindy also mentioned, but we did that at all the sites, and support for credentialing and for the home office classifieds budget, we added the director of health and safety. So again, you're going to see that across all the sites, that that was an additional expenditure not originally budgeted for. So here we are on ECMS Gardena. So their MTSS spending has gone down because they did not end up hiring an interventionist that they had budgeted for. They elected instead to add an instructional coach, which is in a different bucket later. They also had just some salaries under budget in the ELD bucket. You can see that's a bit lower than budget. They had some under budget salaries plus a teaching assistant that left at the start of the year and wasn't replaced for a while. And we also have special ed bucket is a little bit higher than budget because we added an RSP teacher at that site. So on this slide, goal two, the student engagement bucket is the one that's pretty different from budget comparatively. And that was simply because we originally budgeted for a social worker clerk, which we did not end up hiring at any of the three sites. So for goal three, the buckets that kind of stick out as different from budget include the employees for operations. They added some office TAs to support their office. They also added the health and safety coordinator as discussed. And then they also have some additional janitorial and campus support due to staffing on that site.
Quick question. Is this a projected for like this year in total, or is this just up to right now, or is this last year? Sorry.
Thanks for clarifying, Beth. This is for this year, fiscal year 21-22. So it's comparing the budgeted total from back, you know, in our original approved budget versus the current projection. So we haven't ended the year with these exact numbers. Some things could still change, but we have a lot more information now, obviously, because it's almost March. And we also made some specific decisions based upon the final budget that passed and the fact that the schools had a lot more funding than we initially expected. So they're spending more on employees for operations. They're spending more on curriculum and supplies like the other sites, more on computers, more on testing and funding for advisories. And they are spending more on home office classified because of the addition of the director and health and safety. So ECMS Inglewood, they also removed the additional interventionist position in favor of other positions for similar outcomes, I think. But they also, there were a few hires lower than budget in that MTSS bucket, which contributed to that under budget total. And same thing with special education. They are just spending a little lower than budget due to hiring lower than budget and also some leave of absence. On goal two, the big bucket here that's different is outdoor ed. They added in some expense for outdoor education. And also student engagement is a little bit lower than budget now because we did not hire those social worker clerks. On goal three, the buckets that right now are trending different than budget, employees for operations, again, because of the hire of health and safety coordinators. We actually adjusted down their health insurance because we saw that they were trending quite a bit lower than budget. And I think that was just a combination of us being overly conservative in our budgeting and relatively young staff and securing good rates for health insurance in our renewal. In curriculum, they are spending more than budget. That's again, additional computers, additional testing, additional funding for advisories. They are spending more on professional services than originally budgeted. Part of that had to do with ACEs. ACEs funding increased. So the expense related increased. They also put in some consulting support for community outreach and engagement. The home office classified again as more than budget because of the addition of the director of health and safety. And so now for ECHS Gardena. They really are very close to budget in most of the buckets. So I'm not going to talk too much about this slide here because they're pretty much on budget right now. Again, they're much smaller, so it's a little bit easier to budget for them. But again, this slide, they're trending very close to budget as well. No adjustments in forecast in goal two. But in goal three, there were some definite adjustments to forecast. So employees for the educational program, again, they added an instructional coach just due to they had additional funds. They felt they could do it and they felt it was important for their student outcomes. In employees for operations, there's the health and safety coordinator. They added a clerk to support the office because we, in our original bare bones budget, there was only the office manager. And that was, I think, very difficult to manage the office with only one person. And they also added campus support in there, again, for supervision support, because they were pretty bare bones originally, and we had the additional funds to support it. Curriculum and supplies, they added quite a bit for furniture. Again, they had the funds, and they found that they needed quite a bit for furniture. We also added quite a bit for capital expenditures for ECHS Gardena. And this was in order to cover the getting the current classrooms ready in order for students to be able to be in them prior to when we could get the loan secured, obviously. Any questions?
Was that a timing issue? Because we had budgeted nothing for it?
Yeah, it was a timing issue. We hadn't secured the lease yet when we set the budget for them.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Tracy, I have a question on the home office classified. I noticed that it sounds really interesting, providing personnel so that the freeing up the site leadership to focus more on student outcome. But what is that? And you have that obviously for all the schools. What does that look like? You know, I see 5,000 here, but I think Inglewood had a different amount. Is that an extra person? I mean, what does that look like in actuality?
Yeah, it is. It's our director of, I'm sorry if I get the title wrong, but health and safety, I believe, for us.
Yeah, so Jen Fenton's role has significantly supported all the leaders at the sites and many times has been based on the school sites to support with the health and safety implementation so that the principals can focus on instruction. Though everyone was very much intricately involved in the health and safety effort. So, but that was one big addition. But I would say that was true of all of our home office staff this year. Sarah, Jeremiah, all of us were at school sites frequently supporting testing efforts, health and safety measures as needed.
Because it says that you're providing human resources, accounting, financial data management, and fund amount. So that tells me that the principal, assistant principals are being freed up of those duties, right? So it's more than just the health and safety.
Yeah, that bucket in the LCAP comprises a lot of things, but the main driver of the change from budget was the addition of that role.
Got it. Okay, cool. That's fantastic. And the principals, they feel that, they feel that support. They feel like they're able to focus more on the instruction because of the support from the home office.
No, no, no. I can sorry, you're going to hear my little one, but I can specifically say that in the beginning of the school year, I could not be a principal because I was 100% focused on safety. Yes, sir. Sorry, but it wasn't until I had a safe health and safety coordinator that I really felt like I could focus back on instruction and also the adult culture. Sorry about that. But yes, the answer is yes.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Okay, that's amazing.
Okay, so now we're going to update. Back in June, we did a parent budget overview. And so one of the LCAP update requirements is to kind of update what we reported out in that parent budget overview. So really just a very high level, what has changed. And obviously a lot of the granular detail was just presented to you, but on a high level, here we go. So ECHS Lawndale had some adjustments to their revenues that totaled out to just an addition of $24,000. But you can see that their local control funding formula revenues went down a bit, and that was because their unduplicated people count was lower, as Dorothy presented, than we budgeted for. They also had some title funding decrease as a result of that too. So, but it's offset by additional funding we secured after that last parent budget overview, which was the E-rate funding we talked about that funded all those computers, and the COVID testing funding that we're getting that's funding all of that additional testing we're doing. So a lot of expenditures were added as well. And again, most of those were related to providing support for health and safety, either personnel and or personal protective equipment and testing. So that is Lawndale. And here is ECMS Gardena. So as Dorothy presented, we've adjusted down their average daily attendance assumption. So that's the big change in the negative change in revenues there. And then that's offset by increased funding for the COVID funding, the E-rate funding, and also Gardena secured a $40,000 grant that we added into the budget. And that's a local fund. And you know, we added expenses for a lot of those grants as well. For ECMS Inglewood, they also have decreased ADA, which affected their local control funding formula total, with offset by the additional COVID funding and the additional E-rate funding. And they've actually decreased their expenses slightly just because of changes based on hiring and yeah, different expectations for the year, but $28,000, not a ton for a budget of this size. ECHS Gardena, their changes are mainly due to the additional COVID revenue and the E-rate revenue. Right now they're trending, as Dorothy presented, they're trending better than budget in their ADA. So we haven't adjusted their ADA at all, but if anything, they might end up slightly higher than that at the end of the year. And then we have added a little bit in expenses to match those grants that we got in. And so now, if there aren't any questions about the budget, I'll pass it over to Farnaz. Oh, sorry, Kennedy.
I do. The question was going back to Robert Maxwell's presentation on the LCAP right before he passed it on to you. On the chronic absenteeism, particularly ECHS, Gardena is the last one that I saw. It basically had 12% chronic absenteeism, but then for EL, it had 25%, and for SWE, 21%. And so my question is, because that's a big, you know, that number jumped out at me for our English learners and our special ed population, 25% is a huge number. I thought that's like a quarter of that population. So what's being done? Are they calling home and trying to figure out what are the obstacles that are keeping, you know, those, and I'm guessing EL, that means Hispanics, right? So what's keeping our Hispanic students at home from being able to attend school.
Kennedy, just wanted to jump in for half a second. EL does not necessarily equate to all Hispanic students. It's only the ones who are designated, continuing to be designated as English learners as opposed to being reclassified. So it's not like every single Hispanic.
Yeah, no, I get, I know that. I know that, but. Yeah.
I can help with the answer.
Is a huge number.
So right now our social workers are really planning a significant intervention on the chronic absenteeism numbers and have been calling families, trying to support them to get back on campus and provide additional supports. They've done in-home visits. They have a series of interventions planned at this time. It has historically, I think those numbers reflect historical data. Students with exceptionalities and ELs tend to have higher rates of chronic absenteeism, but we are doing our best to try to address it through social workers and additional interventions.
I'll just add that the reason that those groups are specifically mentioned is because of the fact that historically there's been these gaps and we're trying to address them as part of the LCAP plan. So yes, that's why they're there. And yes, historically they've been higher than the rest of the population.
And I just want to appreciate Dr. Matthews because she's providing some additional notes for me in the chat. So thank you, Dr. Matthews. But her additional insight is that it's a very small population. So when you're looking at a very small population, the percentage jumps significantly with one additional student. So 25% can be one or two additional students in these instances.
So that makes sense for SW. Thank you. That's a big difference. Making that explanation, you know, we're talking about 12 students maybe for SW. But what about ELs, right? Because for ELs, the population size is much larger than 12 students, I would think. Or is that also a small number?
It's also a small number. We can get the actual numbers, but it's also a pretty small number. By the time students reach high school or our high schools, we have a much smaller proportion of English learners than in the middle schools. So it's probably a similar number. Okay. I think your question, Kennedy, and the historical gap in chronic absenteeism between like the whole school population and these particular subgroups, I think this is like, it's an important question and one that I've been talking to Michael Martucci, our director of student services, about. And really, you know, if you kind of think about the experience of a student with exceptionalities or an English learner, they're much more likely to feel disconnected from their experience in high school. They're much less likely to feel like the things that they're doing on a daily basis are relevant to them. They're much more likely to feel like it's hard to be successful. It's hard, right? It's hard. It's a harder academic experience for those students. So, Michael and I have been kind of talking about how do we start to think about that problem. And so yes, the acute intervention that Farnaz talked about in terms of social work and figuring out what's the exact problem right now, how can we alleviate it, what kind of community supports can we put in place? But I think there's a bigger question and there is a bigger conversation about how do we make it so that those students, my theory is if that student group feels more successful in high school and sees how their success in high school or middle school is connected to their future, like then we're going to start to see lower rates of chronic absenteeism and higher rates of achievement. So I think there's like the here and now and what do we do about these high numbers? And these high numbers are certainly impacted by COVID and pandemic. But I think the trend is they have typically been higher than the general population for a long time. So how do we address that fact? So I think like I'm happy that you're pushing on this point because it's something that we need to have like not just a short-term answer, but a bigger, broader, more global answer too.
Thank you.
The number of ELs is actually just 12 at that site. So it is a very small number, large enough to have to report, but still very small. So that one additional absent student makes a big difference, right? And of those 12, four of them are also students with exceptionalities. So there's maybe extra factors for those students keeping them from going to getting to school.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So one of the things that we have to do, first of all, I just want to give you guys a heads up. We had a study session planned for the strategic priorities benchmark chart. We're well over time on the LCAP. Why we ever thought this would take 10 minutes is shocking. And I apologize for that. But we will give you a minute with the strategic priorities benchmark chart and come back to it, we promise. This is exactly what's in the strategic priorities benchmark chart. So very much aligned with what we're doing right now. One of the additional things that we're required to do this year is to report on how we're using additional federal funding and relief funding in our LCAP report. So that's what this portion of this requirement is right now. If you go to the next slide. And the first question is what isn't depicted in the LCAP? And this is an applicable test because all of our federal funding and all of the funding sources are depicted in our LCAP. It's a comprehensive plan. On the next slide, it talks about how are we using additional concentration grant add-on funding for staff and the number of staff. And this was an element that was specifically linked to increasing the number of paraeducators that we were budgeting for. So we did use those funds to increase the number of paraeducators and to increase the number of intervention supports that we are delivering. And on the next slide, and says for us to describe how we're working with educational partners with the one-time funding. So we are working with varsity tutors. They provide both one-on-one and group tutoring for our students. We hired a summer programming consultant. We're partnering with Dr. Kenjis Watson and Dr. Tiffany Marie on our anti-Blackness and racism work. We are working with external providers to do SPED support and EL consulting. We worked with program partners outside of us, sort of like Woodcraft Rangers and other partners to deliver supports throughout the summer to expand services to our students. And then on the next slide, it wants us to talk about the American Rescue Plan Act for elementary and secondary students. What were the successes that we experienced and what were some of the challenges that we had? So our successes relative to most other charter schools and public schools that we speak to and that we're talking to, we have both last year and this year have much lower absenteeism rates than anyone we know is reporting. So we're very proud of that. We've had very low COVID spread, knocking on wood, if you believe in that. We've retained staff at higher rates than in prior years, and we've also retained students in higher rates than prior years. We've hired health and safety coordinators who've had a significant impact on our ability to focus on the work, and the introductions of social workers have been incredibly impactful. Beth reported today about partnerships with the social workers to expand social emotional learning curricula in our advisory program, which is really inspiring and exciting. And so we're starting to see the positive outcomes of that right now. Challenges that we've experienced are those that most people have been reporting. It's been hard to hire the people. it's a tight hiring pool right now, and it took a really long time in particular to hire a school psychologist who just started last week. We decided not to hire social work clerks and instead invested in PD and for the social work team, but we also hired the health and safety coordinators, which have had a significant impact. And we've worked on the recruitment and operations and compliance coordinator hire took a long time. Training that role took a long time. And then the last thing is we've hired a lot of additional people. We've reported to you that we're anxious about what that means for years out, but also we have less space than all the staff that we have require. So we've been shuffling in and out of offices. We've done our best to support our teams, but that is a challenge. So on this slide, this is restating a lot of what Tracy has already reported in the budget slides about what were the key strategies that we used. The key strategies we used were the budget modifications that she reported. I just want to give you a minute to skim this one. But if you look at this, we continue to look at our data. We're continuing to identify the supportive needs of our struggling students, as Kennedy talked about it. That is something that we're keeping our eyes on and we're concerned about. I just want to point out Kennedy's questions and the questions that we're getting. That was our aspiration for you guys as a board, to come in and ask those critical questions and hold us accountable. So thank you for doing so. And key strategies that we're doing for our second goal is to promote parent and community engagement throughout the year. We're going to be holding more events and engaging the families more. We've had Green Ambassador events and events that allow parents and community members, partners, and stakeholders to interact with and communicate with each other. And in terms of operations, we have hired additional HR staff to be able to support our hiring efforts for this year. We're expecting some turnover after 2 years of COVID. We have had fewer staff transition out in prior years, and we're expecting some of those people who put their transition on hold to transition out this year, and we're starting to see that. So by having additional HR staff, we've been able to support that. We're working to retain teachers and provide professional development. And by having social workers and additional staff to support high need students, we feel that that actually is a benefit to our teachers when they don't have to worry as much about the student population. We've increased salaries and will continue to do so. Though it's important to say that the COLA adjustment that they're projecting is very much aligned with the inflationary increases. So it'll be interesting to see how we compare with districts in years out. So with that, we are done with this portion of the presentation. I want to open up for any questions. And we only have 3 minutes if I want to get us on to back on track for the strategic priorities benchmark chart. And I have to tell you, this hurts nobody more than me, because I really love this benchmark chart, and I want you all to love it as well, and I want you to know it deeply and care deeply about it. I think that everything that we have reported on right now is reported in detail here, and it really helps us to keep our eyes on everything that we're doing throughout the organization. And what I had planned for us to do at this time was for us to take a deep look at this benchmark chart, give every board member a chance to think about it and review it and ask some critical questions of the chart as a whole. So with that, I'm gonna just give you Jeremiah, can I bug you to send it to everybody?
Sure, I'll do it right now.
I don't know why my screen has frozen like this. Sorry, hold on.
Okay, it's on the chat now, and I'll send it by email too.
Thank you, Jeremiah. What I wanted to point out to everyone on this benchmark chart, and hopefully we'll get a chance to review it in detail very soon, is that it's organized by our organizational priorities. So as it has been in prior years, we begin with sort of the safety dashboard. Even though safety wasn't our top priority, it did become our top priority in days of COVID. And when you look at this, there's some really beautiful and exciting data to see. You can see the progression. So from staff having 85% vaccination rates to 94%, from students, 23% vaccination rates to 56%. You can see the progression of how we're engaging our community and what we've done to increase safety. Then when we scroll down, we can see our priority on advisory. And what's really exciting about this is that when you look at prior year student connectedness rates and you compare it to the current year, this was something that was depicted on the AMOs that Robert reported. There's a really significant jump from 65% and 49% in 17-18 to 77% and 70% this year. Last year was even higher. Even during the pandemic, it was higher. So that was a very exciting and strange data point. But the fact that we've returned to full in person and we've retained some of that connectedness is very exciting. So we talked about chronic absenteeism and attendance rates and how Omicron has negatively impacted our attendance. That's depicted here. So even without all of these reports, looking at this one place, you can see how we can track our data and hold ourselves accountable. What's really exciting is over the past year and the year before, we've had very few of our African-American students who have exited our schools. That was a goal to decrease that number because in prior years, there were higher percentages of African-American students exiting our schools. And we've been able to keep that very low. And also our referral rates for African-American students are very low. Then we look at our best practices for new normal, and we're going to have better data report on this the next time that we come back to you on what we're observing in classes in terms of checks for understanding and student interactions. But you can see that we have our grades that we are tracking that seem to be aligned, though a little bit lower than average years at this time, but we're conscious of it and we're tracking against that. Improved outcomes for students. So this is where you see our CASP proficiency rates in English language arts and our AP exams and our NWEA data for this year. So what I would really love for you guys to do, I'm conscious of the fact that I'm 1 minute over time on this agenda item, is for you to really dig deep in the next week or two. And I'm going to reach out to you guys and schedule some time with board members to offer some additional time to go deeper into this. I'm going to stop sharing now. But I really want everyone to have an intimate relationship with this and to feel comfortable with this data and to be able to ask hard questions from us about it. And I want to appreciate Robert because historically in other organizations, I've dreamed up things like this that hold us accountable. And without a human being who's consistently updating the data and tracking it, it's really impossible to be able to do this effectively. So huge appreciations for Robert and his work to do that. But also, like, this is something that Charter School Growth Fund has asked us to present on at an upcoming presentation for all Charter School Growth Fund grantees. LACO has asked us to present on, and I've frequently been asked by them to share it with another charter school leader. So it's an exciting thing that we do a little bit differently, and I just want to make you guys all feel comfortable and connected with it. So any questions before we move on, I will reach out to each of you and offer some time to go over it if you're interested. Okay, with that, we are back on agenda. So Anthony, it's yes. You.
Thank you. So as standard protocol, we'll move to the consent items A through H, and we will ask for a motion to approve and a second motion, and then we'll open it up for any questions, comments, concerns before we move to vote. So do I have a motion to approve consent items A through H.
I motion to approve. Denise?
And I think Janina, I heard Janina.
Second the motion.
Okay, thank you, Denise and Janina. Okay, any questions, comments, concerns, anything that any of the ECS staff want to discuss regarding these items? Okay. With that, then I will go through the list. I know Madhu had to drop off. I think she is not here, correct, Jeremiah?
Correct.
Okay, just to make note of that. All right, Zena.
Hi.
Ken.
Hi.
Travis.
Hi.
Kennedy.
Hi.
Denise.
Hi.
Janina.
Hi.
And Anthony, I. Consent items A through H have been approved. We'll move on to the action item. There are two. The first one being action item A, approve the CL 500 declaration of need for fully qualified educators. Sarah, if you wanted to take a few minutes to discuss that, and then we'll have a motion and approval.
Yes. Good evening, everyone. So this is something you have all actually already approved, but the CTC returned it back to us. They did not want it to have been approved in a consent item. They wanted it on its own, so in an action item. So I'm just asking you all to do what you've already done so I can send them a copy of it, please.
No okay. Changes. Anybody need to see it? Everyone hopefully looked at it already. With that, do I have a motion to approve action item A?
I motion to approve action A, Zena.
Thank you, Zena. Do I have a second?
I second, Denise.
Thank you, Denise. All right, Zena.
Aye.
Ken.
Aye.
Travis.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Denise?
Aye.
Janina?
Aye.
And Anthony, aye. Action item A has been approved. Moving on to action item B, approve ECS resolutions for the 2022 financing as recommended by the Finance Committee. Tracy, Allison, if you wanted to take a few minutes.
Sure. This is, again, referencing the EFF loan that we talked about in the update earlier. This is a resolution that summarizes all of the aspects of the loan. I don't know if, Farnaz, you want to open it up, but it essentially describes the structure, that it is the obligated group of the two middle schools and the new high school, that it is, ECS is not the borrower on this. It's Menlo Charter Properties. The associated LLCs are the ones that are recognized in the loan as being obligated. However, there is the intercept that will be affecting the schools, and there are the leases that the schools are taking on with or continuing with Menlo Charter Properties. So this describes all of the different aspects of the transaction. There are quite a lot of extremely lengthy documents that the signatories are all going to be signing that are encompassed in this resolution that you'll see at the end in the in one of the appendices. However, it essentially lays out all of the aspects of the loan for the board.
Any questions, comments, concerns from the board? Just as a reminder, it has been recommended by the Finance Committee, so it has been reviewed. Okay, with that, do I have a motion to approve action item B?
I
I'll move to approve action item B.
Thank you, Ken. Do I have a second?
Second, Zena.
Thank you, Zena. Zena.
Aye.
Ken.
Aye.
Travis.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Denise.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
And Anthony, aye. Action item B has been approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll pass that back to Farnaz.
So just this last thing is that we have our March 17th board meeting, which will also remain virtual. And then we have our committee meetings on March 11th for the finance committee meeting. We'll hopefully have additional detail about the forecasted budget at that time and be able to make some better projections. And another finance committee meeting on April 27th and a governance committee meeting on May 17th. Just to give you all a heads up, I have been interviewing candidates, potential candidates for our board, and I do welcome any support the board members might have for potential additional board members to take the spot that Dr. Barnes had. I've really missed her presence on our board. So not just take her spot, but ideally play the role that she played on behalf of our students and our families. If you have people to recommend, we welcome them. I have not found the right person at this time. The few people that I found that I loved, unfortunately, are overcommitted. So keep me posted if you know of anyone. And with that, I want to open up for appreciations for our staff, board members, everyone. I wanted to appreciate our board. This is a long meeting and we have it every year and we go over the LCAP and it's very detailed and it's not as connected as I would like it to be, but it's really hard to cover this much. So I am conscious of the fact that some of you feel like rubber stamp board members, and I do strive to find ways to make it more engaging. And I apologize that we missed an opportunity to do that today, but I appreciate you all for being here. And with that, any other appreciations, I welcome at this point.
Can I just ask a question, which is, why are we having another meeting so soon?
I think it's associated with some compliance requirements. Jeremiah, can you chime in?
Yeah, sure. Primarily, it's a second interim financial reports. And the meeting today was actually the off-cycle meeting because of this new LCAP mid-year update requirement. So that's why we're having another one in the month.
So I'll say just a quick appreciation. You probably heard this saying before, 90% preparation, 10% execution. And I was fortunate enough to be part of the S&P interview with EFF, and the amount of preparation that the team did for Naz and her team and the execution. I was a silent partner for most of the time, so I didn't have to talk, but what a phenomenal job they did in preparing. What a phenomenal job for Naz and your team did in the interview itself. It was clear, at least to me, as a silent partner and observer, how I think impressed they were, how fluidly the conversation went, and I see no reason why we won't be approved and move forward. So I just want to say you guys rocked.
Thank you.
It's a big deal, by the way. A really big deal. So
I just want to also make an announcement that we're having a Unity Fest for Black History Month a little later than expected, but on March 4th at ECHS at between 5 and 7:30. We'll have performances, we'll have vendors, we'll have food and family and a good time. So if individuals are available, March 4th at ECHS, it's going to involve all four campuses for Black History Month.
Thank you, Dr. Matthews. I'm going to send the invitation to everyone after this meeting. You do have to register to attend, and if you can come, that would be awesome. I will be there, and hopefully we'll get to see you guys there. So please, thank you, Dr. Matthews.
Any other appreciations before we move to adjourn?
You know, I think this might be my last time with you guys for this school year. I always admire your work and your dedication to social justice, and that you not only put it on your paper, but you are also you demonstrate it through your daily work. So just, appreciate your work. I know I had a person in my, I'm in the doctoral program at LMU, say they've never really seen social justice like demonstrated. I was like, oh, environmental charter schools, you would definitely see that, through their board, through their leadership. And so just appreciate the hard work that you do.
Thank you, Travis. That's
that means a lot, Travis. Thank you.
Okay, I think with that, it's a good way to end. It's unfortunate, Travis, that we won't see you again, but we appreciate your participation. With that, do I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll motion to adjourn, Denise.
Thank you, Denise. A second?
Janina, I second the motion.
Thank you, Janina. Zena.
Aye.
Ken.
Aye.
Travis.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Denise.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
And Anthony, aye. Approved to adjourn. Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful rest of your evening and a wonderful weekend. Stay safe.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you all. Have a good one.